All right. Well, hi, everybody. I'm Cody Krause, and this is the official start of the Everything Real Estate Show podcast. We've been recording a couple sessions. We have an intro, and going through this whole process, I kind of realized, you know what? I should probably tell you guys a little bit about myself to establish some credibility. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story, not to brag, because there's not much to brag about. There's just as many downs, if not more, than ups. However, I want to, connect with you as my audience and let you know who I am. And I'm speaking to the subject of real estate. So I realize that if you don't know who I am, I should probably build a little bit of credibility into why I think my opinion matters a little bit in real estate, not that much, but more importantly, how I've become connected with a lot of the people that I'm going to bring into this show, who I certainly respect their opinions and their outlooks as this is what they do. This is what they live, eat, and breathe, and so do I. So anyways, here's a little bit about Cody Krause, your host. I'm starting each of my podcasts with the question to my guest, who is so-and-so? Who is Bob? Who is Joe? Who is Jill? And so anyways, the question to myself is, who is Cody? So to give you an example, an outlook of who I am, where I'm at right now, and then I'll kind of peel it back and start a little bit sooner. So at the time of recording this, I'm 31 years old. I can tell you that I'm a sinner saved by grace through faith in Christ. I'm married to my wife, Paige. Paige and I just celebrated 10 years of being married, about 11 years of being together. And it's been a great marriage. She's incredible, and I couldn't do any of this stuff that I'm doing without her. And she's been on this whole roller coaster through my adventures in real estate for the last 10 years. So I love Paige, couldn't do it without her. Paige and I have been blessed with four children. We have two girls and two boys. Our oldest daughter just turned 7. So 10 years married, oldest daughter is 7 years old. And our youngest daughter, Ivy, she is about 1.5 years. So to say that we're busy at home is probably an understatement. We love the kids. It's an absolute zoo, but it's our zoo. We wanted it and we've been blessed with it. I'm an owner of a small real estate brokerage here in Essex County. We're based out of Leamington and Kingsville with a couple satellite offices. I'm an avid real estate investor. I own shares in a couple different holdings companies. And over the course of the last 10 years, I guess, since I've been married, I've owned shares directly or through a corporation that I'm involved in over 30 properties. I'm certainly an advocate for this area. I love Windsor, Essex. I have never lived anywhere that's not Kingsville or Leamington. I lived in Leamington until I was 2 years old, and I haven't lived in anywhere except Kingsville ever since. I love building relationships with people here, and that's kind of what the show is based on. The main topic is real estate, but because I've just been involved in real estate since I was 18 years old, that's where a lot of my relationships in life come from, is from real estate. So I love building relationships around common interests such as real estate, sports, kids, whatever. Super involved in local business. And I love volunteering in our community here. I am involved with the Bridge Youth Center in Leamington. I'm on the board there and honored and humbled to be, because they're doing some amazing things. And I also love getting involved with our church locally. I go to the First Lutheran Church in Kingsville, and I've been on the board of outreach there, headed a couple committees. I love cooking for people. So we get involved with Hugs for Hospice when they come to town. And we do the Blessing of the Bikes in May, and we help, with the parking of the bikes, at Civic Holiday Weekend with the Hugs for Hospice event. And so I love our community, and I love helping out, other people that love the community here. So that's a little bit high level. That's what my life looks like right now. And to give you an idea of where my, journey started in real estate, I'll peel it way back. So my dad, John, he's a realtor of 25 years. So he's been in sales, been kind of an entrepreneur, for many, many years. Before he was in real estate, he was in corporate sales, or corporate management, I should say, with a pharmacy brand that's no longer around called Big V. He was a real estate investor in his early 20s, got involved in some apartment buildings. He owned a bar for a few years. And, so he's had a lot of experience in entrepreneurship. And my mom just recently retired about 2 years ago now. She ran two tanning salons for 35 years. So I come from an entrepreneurial family, and they've inspired a lot of what I do. and taught me a lot of the lessons along the way. Love both my parents, and I still consider them mentors in my life. So when I was around 19 or 20, my dad challenged me to read a book called The Richest Man Who Ever Lived, which is about King Solomon from the Bible, who's actually King David's son. And he also challenged me to read the book of Proverbs once per month. It has 31 chapters, so in theory, you should read one chapter a day, and you'll go through the whole book once a month. You need to do that every day for 2 years. And he challenged me to do this, saying, Cody, if you read this book every day for 2 years, you'll be rich by the end of the 2 years. And so naive, dumb 18, 19-year-old Cody goes, well, yeah, I want to be rich, so that sounds great. So I started reading this book. Fast forward 2 years, I wasn't wealthy from an earthly perspective, but I had a wealth of wisdom. And not to say that I'm a wise person, but I learned a lot of wisdom from the book of Proverbs. And one of the best things from that, from the book of Proverbs, but also one of the best lessons from the book, The Richest Man Who Ever Lived, was the lesson to surround yourself with mentors, people that actually care about you and your best interests, that are willing to say the things that you need to hear, whether it's what you want to hear or not. And they're willing to give you advice that's not just agreeable, but actually for your best interest. They're people that are actually invested in your life, even if it's the hard thing to say. Sorry, normally I don't have notes, but this is a tough one. I'm happy to talk to other people about their life and what they're doing, but I did have to create some notes for my own story because I'm not a huge fan of talking about myself. But again, I wanted to be a little bit vulnerable and relatable and just kind of let you know who Cody is. So like I mentioned, I've had a lot of great mentors. Some are friends, some are older people, some are work colleagues. But a lot of them have shared professional and self-development books with me. Probably my biggest mentor in business and one of my biggest mentors in life, Tim, he actually sponsored me through Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University when I was 18. And that's one of the best things that ever could have happened to me as a young adult. And I highly recommend it to any parent out there. Or even adult, if you haven't gone through that course or read that book, highly, highly recommend it. So Tim sponsored me through that, and I learned a lot of financial lessons through that, debt management, investing, compounding interest, all that kind of stuff. Had a lot of cool high school teachers too, whether it was in the auto shop or whether it was in the business courses, and actually I still get together almost on an annual basis with some of my high school teachers, which I consider mentors also. When I was in high school, I was actually able to work at my dad's real estate company as a co-op. And so he had a team of realtors at that time. I think there was five of them, and they weren't posting their listings on Kijiji. So I said, well, hey dad, if I can get, the business department to sign off on me working you, for you for our high school co-op, I'll work on getting all your listings on Kijiji. And now as realtors, that's something that, Korea actually integrated through realtor.ca and DDF, the data distribution feed, they're automatically pulling over to Kijiji. But at the time, we had to do it manually. And I got a bit of the entrepreneur bug. When I was in high school, I really wanted to ride dirt bikes, and it was really expensive, so I had to get a bunch of jobs. And so at that time, I was cooking at a golf course, started as a dishwasher, then started cooking. I bartended for a little bit. I ran the buffets. So I would do that on the evenings and weekends. In the mornings, I was, during the summer anyways, I was on a farm picking corn and apples and berries and things like that. I also started a lawn care company this summer between high school and university. I was lucky enough to get accepted into a program called Summer Company, which helped young people that had an idea for a business get it started. They gave you a few workshops and some money management lessons and how to register a business. And so anyways, I started a lawn cutting company that I eventually, we ended up doing some moving for people and things like that too. And that actually helped inspire something that we do at The Bridge now called Take Your Shot, which is almost like a Dragon's Den style entrepreneur presentation where youth 17 to 29 can pitch a business idea and win some money to either scale their existing business or to kickstart their new business. So shout out to Take Your Shot through The Bridge. And also Summer Company, which was a great program when I was younger. So anyways, I was cooking. I was working on a farm. I started doing lawn care. I was changing light bulbs at my mom's tanning salon. And what I realized, especially working on the farm and in the kitchen, is that I didn't like to waste time. I'm very impatient. So if I have a task, I want to get the task done as soon as I can. But I wasn't in a career field with those two jobs where the harder I worked, the more I got paid. With lawn care, I did because I was setting my price with the consumer. And if I got more lawns done that day, then I would make more money. But like I said, kind of working at dad's real estate team a little bit and then getting involved with the lawn care company, but then also working hourly jobs, it gave me that entrepreneur bug. And I realized that I needed some kind of a career that would pay me for my performance or my merit to the marketplace, not just the time that I put into it. And so I turned 18 and I started working on my real estate license. And because I wasn't done high school yet, I actually had to write a proficiency exam that basically just said, no, I don't have my GED, but I have sufficient knowledge and skills to be able to sell real estate. So I started going through those exams, and within 6 months, I had my real estate license. My parents really wanted me to go to university. I had the marks, so I got accepted into University of Windsor, and I went into their business program there. I wasn't huge on the fact that you didn't get to specialize until the third year, so I got really impatient. And for those of you that already know my story, I lasted 2 semesters at university, so it wasn't a long-term thing, and I didn't get the degree because I was really impatient, too impatient to finish school. What I did at the University of Windsor is I lined up a full course load on 2 days a week, which is maybe one of the reasons I didn't like school. So Mondays and Wednesdays, I think, classes started somewhere around 8 or 9 a.m. and they went till like 9 p.m. But it allowed me to get a sales job with an industrial supply company called Fastenal that I worked the other 3 days. And then evenings and weekends, I was doing open houses and starting to show homes since I got my license. I was still working my cooking job and sometimes bartending at the golf course, and then the odd time still changing light bulbs for mom at the tanning salon. And at that time, Tim, one of my mentors who I mentioned earlier, he challenged me, and he cringes when I remind him that he told me this, because he goes, I don't think I said that. But at that time, must have been spirit-led, he said to me, Cody, you need to get into real estate full-time or you can't stay on our team. So I figured, well, you know what? I'm 18, 19 years old. I don't have a wife, don't have a mortgage. I'm paying my dad a little bit of rent, my mom a little bit of rent. But if there is a time to get full-time into a sales career that's 100% commission, now probably makes sense more than any other time. I did have a tiny little bit of success. I did sell my first house before I turned 19. So at 18, I sold my first home. However, my first year, because I couldn't dedicate enough time to real estate full-time, I only sold 2 homes. At that time, the average sale price in our area was very low. And the cost of getting your license wasn't that much cheaper than it is now. So it was actually a net negative year. But anyways, I decided to get into real estate full-time. Didn't really know what I was doing. Met my wife shortly after that. We started dating. We got engaged pretty quick and married pretty quick too. And we had to buy a house. My first year in real estate, I was busting my butt, but I was 19 years old, 20 years old, driving a truck with no muffler, some baggy khakis. I probably looked like I was 16. And I'm very, very thankful to my first clientele that put some trust in me and took a chance on me. And I was lucky enough to get a couple sales under my belt. I think I made $26,000 my second year in real estate. End of the third year, finally made $39,000. So I was like, sweet. I've been working, you know, 60, 80 hours a week here. I finally made minimum wage. But that laid the foundation for my future career continuing in real estate, because at the end of year 4, it was finally like, okay, all this work is paying off. And so around that time, my second or third year, Paige and I got married. It was 2014. We were 19 or 20 years old, 20, maybe 21. Anyways, we bought our first house. It was a beat up old cottage with some leaks. The actual plumbing vent wasn't connected inside the wall. So every time it rained, we had rainwater basically coming through the wall, wrecking the flooring. So I learned a lot of lessons on this home. We ended up basically gutting the whole thing. Changed the layout a little bit, did flooring, kitchen, some insulation, replumbed, redid a lot of electrical, replaced some windows, resided the house. We actually had to replace floor joists. We had to do drainage work in the crawl space. It was hard clay with no vapor barrier down there or anything like that. So we learned a ton. And a good lesson I learned at that time was from my grandfather. My grandfather, he's still alive right now, Bob. Shout out to Bob. Bob's 92, and at that time, he would have been, you know, 82, something like that. He lived on a 90-acre farm by himself. My grandmother had passed shortly before that, And this is a guy who maintained the property by himself in his 80s. Had a really cool woodworking shop. Every time a tree fell down on the property, if it was usable, he'd mill the tree, make furniture out of it, or he's big into like making artwork from wood, and he would actually produce that and give it to the grandkids and his kids at Christmas. So this is a guy who does everything on his home on his own, doesn't lean on other people too much for stuff. And he goes, Cody, have you renovated a home before? Because you just bought a total fixer-upper, and like you got a big project ahead of you here. I said, nope, but I'm going to learn, and I'm going to do the plumbing, and I'm going to do the electrical, and I'm going to figure this whole thing out. And he goes, you're doing pretty good at selling houses, right? And I said, well, you know, I like to think so. I've actually had a couple people use me for a second time now, so I think I'm doing something right. I'm not the best. But he goes, Cody, I bet if you spent all the time that you're about to spend trying to figure out how to renovate your house and put your effort into selling homes, you'd probably be a lot further ahead, wouldn't you? And I said, well, yeah. And not being totally naive, I knew I was going to make some mistakes, probably end up having to hire a professional to fix them along the way too. And so he taught me a great lesson in scaling my time that day. And I didn't think that I would hear it from him, but I did. And that was a game changer. Around that time, I had someone that I was talking to about opening a real estate company in this area kind of talked to me about a dentist's business model. And he said, well, Cody, do you understand how a dentist run their company or their practice? And I said, well, no, not really. And he goes, who's your dentist? And I told him, well, it's Dr. So-and-so. And he said, okay, does Dr. So-and-so meet you at the door, tell you to have a seat? Do they spend 30 minutes cleaning your teeth? Do they collect your money after the appointment and book your next one and say, see you in 9 months? And I said, no, they don't do any of that. And he said, well, what do they do? And I said, well, I might see him for 3-4 minutes. But he does the stuff that matters. He checks the big stuff after the hygienist does what they need to do. And then if I need a surgery or cavity filled or whatever, he does that. And he said, well, you need to scale your business like a dentist. And he goes, as realtors, we spend a ton of time doing busy work. At that time, I was putting up the signs for our whole team's listings. I was taking the pictures, trying to figure out the drone, doing the showings, doing the open houses, the stuff that we should be doing. But I was so busy with all the other stuff, I wasn't putting emphasis on growth. And kind of thinking back to my conversation with my grandpa too, Cody, if you spend all that time that you're about to spend on renovating your home, if you just went to your job and did your dollar producing activities, you'd be a lot further ahead. And so that was kind of a multi-forked lesson there, both professionally and personally. So I ended up hiring a general contractor and a few other trades to help me renovate the house. And I didn't have the money at the time. And I hired the most expensive guy because he was able to communicate his value and expertise the best. But I figured it out and I went to work and I busted my butt. And again, thankfully to my loyal clientele, I was able to make some money and pay for all the renos after I put them on credit card and paid it off later. But it did get to the point where I didn't have the income to pay for everything that I was doing. Luckily, it was a 140-foot lot, so I learned my first lesson in, I guess, land development there at a very, very small scale. I was actually able to sever the lot in half. So it was 140 feet. I severed it into a 70 by 111 or 112 lot, and I was able to sell the lot off. Now, I sound like an old man here saying I bought my first house for $104,000, and I severed a lot and sold it off for $26,000, a 70-foot lot for $26,000. But this would have been back in 2014. Our area was still recovering from the recession of 08-09 because we're a sub-market of Windsor, and Windsor's directly affected by the auto industry in Detroit. So things hadn't quite boomed yet. So I was able to sell that lot off, and it was able to finance the rest of the renovations. One of the coolest things that happened through the process of doing the renovations was that I kind of learned how to general contract, but also I was developing a relationship with all the trades that were coming in and working on the home. And some of those trades to this day are my most loyal clients. And so I was able to support their business and get a great product from them, the work that they did on the house. But then developing that relationship with them, we actually became friends and loyal clients of each other. So whenever someone asked for a siding contractor, I was always recommending John. And guess what? John fixed up and moved a lot. So John always recommended me too. So shout out to John and a lot of my other loyal clients that have been with me since almost the very beginning. Again, I'm going to sound like an old man here, but it wasn't that long ago. It's just our market has so rapidly appreciated About a year or two after we finished renovating that house, I went to an open house that my dad was doing for a local contractor named Anthony. And Anthony's built a lot of homes in this area, and he's actually built two homes for my wife and I. And at that time, you could get a 1,280 square foot ranch home on a 50 by 114 lot for $269,000. And it had a two-car garage, granite counters. It was stone and vinyl siding. It was a really cute little home. And we were able to negotiate a finished basement into it for not that much more money. And we ended up selling our first house and going into our second house there. And around that time, we tackled one of our first flips also. We bought a little home in Kingsville. It was in a great neighborhood, but it was the ugly duck on the block. It was an estate sale. It was smoked in. So we learned some lessons in that one. I did a lot of the work myself, and again, should have scaled that out and hired out what I did do myself. But it was profitable. I said to my dad the one day, you know, we have clients that are buying investment properties and getting paid every month, or making a good chunk of money on a flip, but we're only getting paid once. We need to start looking at investments. So my dad partnered with me on our first flip there. And just before that, we actually partnered 50-50 on our first rental property. And that was in Windsor. It was a university rental. And we actually learned the Burr method there on accident. We bought the home, closed on it, started renovating it. We did some carpet and some paint, cleaned it up a little bit, got it rented out. And then we wanted to buy another rental property, but we didn't have the cash because we just put it all into this other one. So we went back to the Royal Bank at the time, said, you know what, can we pull some money out of this? Like, it, we understand that we financed it at the purchase price, but we've significantly improved it. And we know that you loan money 80% to 20% equity on homes. Can you reappraise the home post renovation, and then so that we can pull the money out and then go buy another home and do it again? And so that's the Burr method that we all know now. But at that time, there wasn't podcasts or books that talked about the Burr method, which is buy, renovate, rent, and refinance. That's where the Burr comes from, B-R-R-R. And so we learned that method on accident on our first rental property. And so we ended up buying a few rentals, and we went through this process a couple times. And at the time, they were cash flow positive. You could buy a home for around $100,000, maybe $120,000. Interest rates were around 3.5%, and you could get around $1,000 a month on rent. So they were cash flow positive. Learned a lot about profiling tenants and picking the right person. And now I know that I really don't like to go through the process without a credit check, interviewing their employers, talking to their past landlords. Had some amazing tenants over the years, and I would say 80% of them are great people. And I've also been taken advantage of by some too. So that's some lessons that I've learned along the way. We also learned a lesson in scaling. And I'll say that if you want to own more than five rental properties, whether it's with partners or personally, you're going to run into some financing issues. So RBC had capped us at five or six. At that time, they had a great financing program where they gave you 80% of your rents towards the debt servicing ratios. They were giving you a residential rate, even though it was a rental property. Not all banks and credit unions do that. But they capped us at five, and I think made an exception to six. And I was chomping at the bit here to continue growing the portfolio. So we actually incorporated a holdings company, and we realized that we needed to do that to scale to get to commercial financing. Because with commercial financing, rather than just looking at the income of the borrower and making sure that you can service the debt, instead they primarily look at the asset and make sure that the asset can service the debt payments that come along with the asset. So we ended up creating a holdings company, but what we ran into there is we owned the properties personally. And we didn't realize initially that if we create the holdings company, we thought we could just bring the properties over from our personal names to the holdings company, but we didn't realize we were gonna have to sell them at market value personally. So we actually had to pay capital gains on the increase of the value from when we bought it to when we sold it to the holdings company. We had to pay land transfer tax on it to go from the personal name, because it was technically a sale, to the holdings company. And then the mortgage that we got on it, I think the rate was a little bit higher because it was a commercial loan, but Bank of Montreal actually had a great program for us there, where I think they were giving us the residential rate for a while. So we learned a lesson where if you want to scale, you should probably set up your systems right from the first place. So if you know that you want a large rental portfolio, you need to start with the corporation rather than initially acquiring them in your personal name. So that was a lesson that we learned along the way of acquiring a few rentals. we got lucky enough to represent a condo development in Kingsville, and it took us many, many years to sell it because it was one of the first in the area. And we ended up buying a number of the condos there too. So originally our strategy was single family rentals at cash flow. And the reason I liked single family rentals is they're fairly liquid as far as real estate goes. Nothing's liquid in real estate like a stock is. But single family rentals are probably the most liquid because there's a lot more end users, people that want to primarily occupy homes versus landlords that want to buy duplexes, fourplexes, or apartment buildings, or even vacant land. So that was initially our focus, was single family rentals that cash flowed. And then we ended up going into condos mostly because we were involved with this condo development. And at the time it looked like we could about break even. They would carry themselves, not a great positive cash flow, but they'd carry. And it, depending on how many of these condos we took, we could come up with the down payments for. We were paying down a lot of principal on them because they were financed at a low interest rate. So we ended up getting involved with condos, and we had an investor buy a number of condos, and he was from out of town, and he said to us, well, who's going to manage these condos for me? In Vancouver, I have somebody that manages them for me. And we said, well, there's not really any property management companies in Kingsville. So he said, well, why don't you guys manage them? You got condos in here. You have your own rentals. Why don't you manage mine too? And so, okay, all of a sudden we had to incorporate a property management company also. Now, we haven't really focused on growing, and it's been more for this client, a few other clients that we have personal relationships with, and then our own. And we've learned a lot of the interesting things along the way with that too. With condos, it's not a lot of neighbors calling you saying that they're selling drugs or leaking basements because they don't have basements a lot of the time. It's a lot more of a sweet old retired lady that can't change her own light bulb or the lint trap is full on the dryer. So you get a lot of funny calls like that, but they're pretty easy to fix. They don't cost a ton of money. They don't cash flow like the single family homes did at the time. And now single family homes don't really cash flow. But we really liked renting to the retiree crowd. We actually found that having an inventory of our own rental units to offer the retiree crowd was great for our sales business because we had a lot of retirees that wanted to sell their home and said, well, we don't know where we're going to go. And we were able to offer them these rentals to go into. Also found that they're not living paycheck to paycheck because they have the equity from the sale of their home. If they're selling a $500,000 home, they could put it into a GIC, maybe at 4%, 5%, and get most of their rent covered in these condos just off the returns from the sale of their house invested into a GIC. So we didn't get a lot of, you got to wait till next paycheck like we did with some of our single family home tenants. A lot less trashing it, a lot more phone calls, but for little things that don't bother you as much, even though they might seem annoying at the time. So we've enjoyed being landlords for condos also. In 2018, we got a opportunity to buy an existing mini storage facility and didn't know how I was going to do it, but I knew it was a great opportunity. I ran the numbers and it cash flowed. So I ended up creating a holdings corp, myself, my dad, and two other awesome guys that I know quite well that are mentors of mine. And so for 3 years, we operated this mini storage, and very, very involvement heavy. It's the management of the day-to-day was huge with a mini storage. A lesson we learned on that is it's a commercial lease compared to a residential lease. So residential leases, if someone doesn't pay you, you can't kick them out that month. Or even during COVID, you couldn't start any new evictions at all. Commercial leases, if someone doesn't pay you, technically you can lock their unit or change their locks that day. Also, we could accept and process payments on credit card, and we're processing payments of $150 or $180 rather than $2,400 for rent. And so really enjoyed the mini storage business. We ended up getting out of it because we had a great property manager. But then she got into another career. And so I ended up doing a lot of the management, hired another manager, but it was just becoming too much for us to manage the storage property. So we ended up getting out of that after 3 years, saw some great appreciation on it. And it allowed us within that company to buy two parcels of vacant land, just single family home building lots that we bought at good value. One of them we flipped, one of them we still own, and it's actually for sale right now. With that company, we ended up starting another company and partnering with two friends of mine that are involved in commercial real estate holdings, and learned a lot from these guys too. And we ended up buying a threeplex, which we have now legally made into a fourplex and renovated the whole thing and brought that to cash flow positive. So that was our first multifamily investment that we had made. And with that company, we also bought two small old homes on small lots, pushed them over, and just recently completed another fourplex that we're now leasing. So this is kind of my journey, where we started single family, even into vacant land off the first single family. I've done the long-term rentals, single family homes and condos. We ended up doing multifamily, like I said here. We got into the vacant land a little bit. We did the commercial type leases with the mini storage, the self storage, and then flipped some of the vacant land. Learned a lot about partnerships through corporations through this whole process here. Most recently, I've gotten into short-term rental. In 2022, I abandoned a few of my values, which were location, 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 positive cash flow, things like that, because everything was appreciating so quickly, making pretty good money in sales. I got lazy and I kind of lost sight of some of the fundamentals that helped build my portfolio to that point. And unfortunately, those are where some of my first losses came in from investing in real estate. Bought a bad home in a bad neighborhood, didn't scrutinize the tenant, and it got trashed. And we ended up losing money on it when we sold. We didn't put enough research into rezoning it and building what we wanted there, so we had to sell it at a loss. And along that line, I bought an Airbnb with a friend of mine. We formed a limited liability partnership, and we purchased it. And we did it cash flow negative, but we did it with the understanding that one of us wanted to eventually live there with our families, renovate or push the home over and build new. But we both understood that we were buying a negative cash flowing asset in the meantime. So these are where some of my first losses came in. And I don't want to create this podcast thinking that all we do is make money and I haven't made any mistakes. So I want to let you guys know I have made some of these mistakes when I veered away from the fundamentals, which are you always want to buy positive cash flow. You always want to buy the good neighborhood, the good location. You always want to buy something that is going to appreciate, but you don't want to buy it for the appreciation. It's got to carry itself also. I've learned some of these lessons through personal losses. I've seen clients, same thing. So I want to establish some of that credibility in that I haven't done everything perfect. I'm not just going to brag about that. I can share with you some of the mistakes that I've made too. So I have gotten involved in the short-term rental industry now with one Airbnb. And most recently, with my wife's blessing, we put our entire net worth on the line. And we made an offer to the company owners that within the real estate brokerage that I've been working in for 12 years at this point, to buy the real estate brokerage. And so now I've actually stepped out of the sales world and into management and business building for other realtors full time for a few reasons. One is because we have four children, seven and under. I wasn't spending enough time at home with them. Found myself often saying yes to my clientele and no to my family. And it was great for my business, but it wasn't great for our family. So this allowed me to change what my day looks like a little bit more, allowed me to do things like start this podcast. And I'm really enjoying it so far. Now, the real estate brokerage was an operating business, a franchise on its own. Most importantly, with the sellers that I bought the business from came the real estate. And they owned three of the four locations. And that was the huge draw to buying this company and the reason that I was willing to put my family's net worth on the line. So we actually liquidated a lot of the properties that we own, liquidated all of our investments, our retirement accounts, our tax-free savings. We had some nice paid for cars. We sold them and bought some used ones, and shout out to my wife again, cause she's driving an old minivan that leaks oil right now. And she had a brand new nice car last year that she loved, but, it was a family decision and we decided to do it. We're learning a lot of lessons with this now because we're now commercial landlords where we're, our main anchor tenants are the real estate brokerage that I own and operate. However, we do have other, tenants in the properties also. And something really cool with commercial property, especially where it's a long time owned mom and pop show, is a lot of times these buildings have been paid for decades, or they have very, very high equity in them. And vendor take back loans are something that can be accommodated from time to time. And so in a further episode, I'll maybe dig into how we structured the finance of the holdings that came along with the real estate brokerage, even though it was a separate company. That pretty much brings us to today in 2024. So that's Cody Krause in a nutshell. I'm your host of the Everything Real Estate Show. I can promise you this is going to be the most boring out of all the episodes, and I look forward to filling the chair on the other side here with all of our guests. And anyways, I hope that you guys get a lot out of this. If there's a guest that needs to be on the show that I haven't already talked to or interviewed, let me know, and I'd love to sit down with them and connect with them and have a conversation that you would all benefit from. And anyways, thank you for taking some time out of your own life to listen to what I have to say. And I hope that it doesn't come across as bragging or overconfident or cocky or anything like that. I want to make sure that you're getting value out of this show every week that I put on, and I'm open to your feedback as to how I can do that. Thanks so much. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to the show, folks. Please keep in mind that this show is not offering legal, financial, or accounting advice, but rather opinions and experiences in the world of real estate from the host and the guests. If you're enjoying the show, please rate, review, and share with your friends and colleagues. And if you think that there's someone that needs to be on this show, please feel free to connect them with me. Or if there's a topic that should be discussed, feel free to let me know. Thank you so much, and bye for now.